sorry about that.
Hi, my name is Cynthia Hawthorne, and I'm here tonight representing the Santa Cruz Education Foundation. And it's my pleasure to give you a quick update of what we've been up to this last month, particularly the last week. It was pretty amazing. Hillary Clinton and the Foundation both had a great week. So we kicked it off with the Avid fundraiser on Monday night. That was at Oswald's, and Sheila was there, and Deb came, and I think Allison was certainly there. It was a collaborative effort between the Avid teachers and the Santa Cruz Education Foundation, and the purpose of the event was to raise money to pay for the field trips for the students. And it became particularly clear to me this week about why that is such an important thing to have happen, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. But in addition to the dollars that were raised there, we also have a donor who has come forward and has committed $10,000, and he's willing for it to be an annual event as long as two things happen, that the collaborative partnership between the Santa Cruz Education Foundation and the district maintains, and you as a board continue to fully fund Avid. Mr. Hastings was absolutely impressed with the fact that this is the equity piece that he's been looking for in our schools for a long time, and he was willing to come to the table not just this year, but annually, as long as we keep those agreements. So one of the things that happened this week for me is I got a great message from one of the Avid teachers, who, by the way, worked their butts off on that event. And what she explained to me is that she has 15 seniors who are really probably UC eligible. And thus far, they've only been able to go to Sonoma State and Dominican. And every kid has applied to Sonoma State and Dominican. Now, Sonoma State is a great school, and so is Dominican. But they're actually UC Davis eligible. So what we're doing is quickly pulling together a trip. Because what we understand is that if you haven't seen something, you can't imagine yourself there. So this is what we're kind of working on right now, and we're trying to pull it together really quickly, and I know what they're trying to coordinate to see if any of the vans are available from the small schools to help out, and if not, I will hire a van to take them and a driver. So I just want to let you know that it really does make a difference. You really can't dream the dream if you haven't even seen the frame that it could be in. The second thing that happened this last week was we had a parent meet and greet, and what that was is we gathered all the parent leaders from the district, and every one of the comprehensive schools that came except for one, and what we talked about basically was giving the parent leaders a chance to meet each other, to talk about their issues, to talk about their commonalities, to talk a little bit about economy of scale purchasing, and also to understand that they really do share some of the same not only goals but challenges, and that they actually didn't have a way to communicate with each other. We used to do this a lot with the Ed Foundation a number of years ago. It's the first time we've done it recently. And it was very very successful. We had about 35 people show up, and it was supposed to be for an hour and a half, and we stayed 3 hours. So thank you. And I have one more that I want to tell you about, and that is that it's the safety training program, and it's one that I think it's an incubator program for us that we really want you to kind of partner with us. So it was based upon the events this summer, and it's a partnership with Kid Power. So the foundation is paying for trainings at all of the elementary schools because, as they say in Chinese medicine, if the child is below 8, treat the parent. So what we want to do is basically let parents know, understand what they can do to keep their children safe. And each of the schools, each of the 4 elementaries are implementing it, each with their own style. But eventually here, as we're paying for it now, this is something that I think we might incorporate, much like we did the safety training programs at the middle and high schools. We kicked it off, we paid for it first, and you guys have picked it up. And I think that this might be a conversation that we need to have about how to give students the ways and the information to keep themselves safe. And that one, by the way, is championed by Casey Coonerby. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak?
Jim Longston, community supporter, school supporter. I'd just like to, I don't know whose idea this was, but it was a stroke of genius. And I was dancing in the street when I got this report, state of our school. This is one of the best things I've seen this board do since you've been in order. It's wonderful. And you cannot imagine the effect that it's had on people when because we don't always get the credit we deserve in local newspapers. And when you get a mailer like this, it's absolutely tops, and they couldn't come at a better time. So thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak tonight? The next item is the superintendent's report.
You should announce that.
Good evening. Yesterday, I was able to attend an annual meeting of the Reach Higher Shasta Initiative, which is a collaboration between 25 school districts in Shasta County. And it's an initiative that's similar to the Santa Cruz County College Commitment, but it is a cradle to career program. And I wish I could have had y'all with me, because it was pretty exciting. Like us, they're working on planning a planning grant through the Gates Foundation, and Riverside County, Shasta County, Santa Cruz County are all in the same core group that Gates is having us collaborate together. I learned a lot about their work, and I'm going to be excited to share it with the S4C steering committee and really see a lot of possibilities for us in what they're doing in terms of college and especially career readiness. They have a really nice career portal and a collaboration with Shasta College that has some of those next steps that we wanted to see and couldn't quite envision yet, so I'm excited about the possibilities. This week I was also able to meet with Superintendent Tamara Taylor from Flag Oak School District. I appreciate the continued collaboration with her and our efforts at articulating and our work on behalf of all of our kids. The Harbor High School baseball field grand opening was last Saturday, the 24th. I wasn't able to be there, but Molly represented Cabinet and Trevor represented our district directors along with two of our groundspeople, Stan and Becky, to celebrate that opening. Coming soon, you can expect to see our initial LCAP surveys for the 2015-16 school year as we are evaluating last year's plan and starting to think about the revision of our LCAP moving into the spring. We'll have surveys for staff, students, and parents to give us input on current programming and what they see as needs. On October 17th was the Samper Open House at Rio College, where all of our fourth graders were invited with their parents this year for the first time to attend. Angela and I got to be there, and we got to watch a bunch of fourth graders enroll their little minion in college. And they also had an opportunity to see some amazing presentations from professors who have liked to steal and bring into our campuses. There was a physics professor that just did incredible fourth grade science lessons. And it was a very welcoming experience for students and their families. And we didn't have as many of our students attend as we'd like to have, so we're going to work next year at doing more active recruiting of parents and families to have them participate in that event. I also want to acknowledge the Santa Cruz Education Foundation and the AVID fundraiser that happened at Oswald's last week. As Cynthia shared, more than $10,000 was raised on behalf of AVID, and we're grateful to the foundation for their ongoing support. And that's it for tonight.
Thank you. We have no students tonight, so we'll go on to board reports.
I would also just like to thank the Ed Foundation for their ongoing support of AVID. It was a great night, and I shed a few tears. The kids were great, as usual. They're just very inspiring. I wanted to acknowledge the passing of Live Oak Board Mike Vicente, and just acknowledge his dedication to the well-being of students in this district. And this Saturday is Halloween, and it's the annual Halloween Dia de los Muertos Parade and Carnival Golf. Parade starts at 9:30, and the carnival goes till 2. It's the best gig in town, so shall I go? That's it.
I attended the Harbor High School football game, homecoming, and I was just very impressed by the parents and the students and the teachers that were there and the administrators, and it was just a real community feeling at this football game, and I had a great time, and I just want to thank everybody at the school that puts this on and really acknowledges the students and the sports teams that are involved. And Santa Cruz, or it was Scotts Valley, did really, really well. And Harvard, they played really, really hard. And I'll just leave it at that. But our team was wonderful, and they hung in there throughout the whole game, which was a tough game. I also visited Westlake Elementary with Allison and Chris. And I'm just really impressed, again, by the parent involvement in that school. And there were parents in every classroom, and it was just wonderful to see them working in small groups with the kids, and the kids were just so engaged, and the teachers were very welcoming, so I wanted to thank the teachers and the parents and the kids for allowing us to come pop in on that.
Well, I'd like to thank my friend Mr. Chakanaka for inviting me to a classified employee conference in San Jose that I attended with my son who was in town. It was really interesting to go to the events and hear statewide speakers addressing the needs of classified employees. There was a really great lecture on history of labor, on negotiations, just to see it from a new perspective, so I really appreciate that. And I know that Robert's vice presidents were there, and it was a day well spent, so thank you.
Well, I continue to be busy in support of a couple of tax measures that are currently on the ballot. And last Sunday was the fourth Sunday of the month, so I was at Santa Cruz High for their monthly cleanup. I think the parents were doing a wonderful job in the collaboration with the staff there and M&O to get a few things off the ground and really keeping it shipshape. And I invite anybody who is in town in November on the fourth Sunday, which I believe is the holiday weekend, but they're still going to have it. Or in December, they're going to move it to Saturday the 12th. Prior to the holidays, so thanks for that, and that's where you can find some work parties going on.
So a couple weeks ago, I attended the second of a five-week series on Masters in Governance. I got my homework done. It was a very informative class. I was happy to be there. I was also excited to be at the Avid fundraiser. It was very inspiring. And I want to thank the Ed Foundation for their work and their collaboration. I attended Harbor's theater production of You Can't Take It With You, and I want to do a shout out for Kathy Warner and the amazing work that she does four times a year. The kids are so empowered. They do all of the tech and the sets and the costumes. My two daughters were participated in it, and they were dead tired this weekend. And then finally, last Saturday, I attended the closing session of, I want to get the name right, the first Queer and Ally Student Summit that was held at Santa Cruz High. And there were about 35 to 40 youth from across the county. It was a countywide event. About maybe a little more than half of them were from Santa Cruz City Schools. Representatives from their QSAs, their advisors were there. They had lots of informational sessions, and there was a panel of resources. It was a half-day summit that they're going to try to do every year. And I wanted to thank the three folks at Santa Cruz High to help make it happen, Steve Kupald, Todd Banks, and Vichy Lal, who collaborated with the Queer Youth Task Force to bring that on.
Okay, I also attended the Avid celebration, and I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. It's nice to see people being so enthusiastic about a program. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say this or not, but I did ONP calling. I feel like I'm a little advertisement. I don't know if that's if it's as an individual or as a board member. Is it okay if I say it?
It's just a fact.
You just said it.
Okay, I just said it.
You don't know what you were calling about.
Right.
But
it's a really good thing to do, that thing that I can't talk about. And Chris and I had the first community meeting of this year?
The second,
okay, at Westlake School. And it, one of the things that impressed me, there were quite a few teachers and parents who came. And one of the things that was very impressive to me was that they were thinking about a lot of things. They were asking lots of questions. They had lots of opinions. And I felt like if these were the parents of the new generation, they also, a lot of them had a child in kindergarten, first grade, and a child at middle school. Mm-hmm. So they really saw the problems from both ends. And I just felt really good about if these are the parents and these are the teachers we have now, it speaks well for the future. So I really enjoyed it. And that's it for me this week.
Okay. Delta News, they are busy preparing for their WASP visit next month. They feel very supported by a CalTeach math intern and four UCSC at 180 students. Current enrollment is 134. And we are planning meetings because we'll be needing to hire a new principal. Mary Goffel Forrester is retiring. Then from the Cabrillo perspective, the fourth grade open house was very successful. Over 300 families participated, and Cabrillo posted some great pictures. Looks like it was a lot of fun. And I just in general want to congratulate the district for all the positive press that we've been receiving. I'm glad that others get to hear a little bit about the wonderful things that we do in our schools. And that includes letters to the editor. Thank you. Our next item is approval of the minutes. The minutes from the October 14th meeting, the regular meeting. Is there a motion?
I had a revision that I already submitted to Nancy. I had said in the minutes that it had said in the minutes that Shannon Green was concerned about the use of librarian time on textbook, and I said that I was concerned about mm-hmm. that, and we made that correction.
Yes, and Hattie had one as well.
And I also had a correction that is reflected in the newly posted minutes. It was just some wordsmithing from perhaps I didn't articulate well. So thank you, Nancy.
So a motion to approve the revised minutes.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Okay, Allison moves and Patty seconds. Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Now the minutes for the SCCS Finance Authority meeting on the same night. Is there a motion?
I move that we approve.
Sheila moves.
Second.
And Dee Dee seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Moving on to the consent agenda. Are there any items that board members would like pulled for discussion? Okay, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'd like item 8.1.8.1.2.
Okay.
8.1.1.2.
All right.
Sheriff Department. Okay.
Yeah.
Any other items? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the other items?
Move approval.
What? Should I announce the gifts before we approve?
We'll do it at the end. Okay. We have a motion and a second, and it's a roll. Comments from the fellows? Comments?
Would you repeat that number again?
I'll sing it for you.
8.1.8.1.2.
The agreement between the Sheriff's Department and Adult Education.
Roll call.
Aye.
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 Aye. Now, item 8.1.8.2.
8.812.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So, I see, of course, this is one of those, this is an agreement in which we're going to be paid up to $151,300 for services that we provide for those who are incarcerated. And I just didn't see any signature by Barry or the union, and I was wondering hourly rates and that sort of stuff, and just briefly on that.
So this has been a long-term agreement we've had with the Sheriff's Department through adult education. Our adult educators have provided instruction, GED instruction.
Right. GED prep, yeah.
And it's our adult ed educators. It's an ongoing thing. We were concerned about the language in the contract, and we spent some time cleaning up the contract this year, so this is a revision of that contract.
Any other questions?
I was just going to say, Jeremy, that this is an agreement between the district and the jail, but the instructor's agreement is the employment contract between the Federation and the district.
Okay.
Any other?
That's it. Thank you.
Can we have a motion to approve the item?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Roll call?
Aye.
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 Aye. Sheila, could you read the gifts?
Mm-hmm. Pardon me. Got me at the wrong moment. We appreciate the gift from Lewis A. Billings, who donated Type A machines 2012-2013 series, one 3D printer, and a plastic spool to the Alternative Family Education Program. So thanks very much.
And Patty, report of actions taken in closed session.
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard an update and provided Superintendent Chris Monroe with direction regarding SCCCE negotiations for the 2014-15 and the 2015-16 years, and the GSCFT for the 2014 through 2017 years. The Board of Trustees conferred with legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation, and the Board of Trustees took action on special education settlement agreements.
Thank you. Our next item is 8.3.1, the staff report, regional occupation program, and career technical education.
Good evening. Tonight, I am pleased to have four ROP teachers with me, are with us to share about their programs, but before we do, we're going to talk a little bit about the transition of the ROP programs to Sanford City Schools. We're grateful to the county office for their support as we transition. If you'll recall, last spring we made an agreement to a four-year transition plan, and the four teachers here tonight have all become full-time Sanford City Schools teachers in this process, and I'm going to grab the, we're going to have technical difficulty. I really need an ROP suit.
You need an ROP suit.
Okay, so these are just some photos from different ROP classes that we have at our high schools. One of the pluses of moving the ROP programs to the school district responsibility is that we no longer have, they don't have to all be kids who are 16 or older too to access the courses. It's going to give us some more freedom. All of our district goals are supported by ROP, particularly goals number 1, 2, and 3. Our mission is to ensure that all students are prepared for college and career when they complete high school. Our ROP and career technical education coursework is essential for that preparation. We want to ensure that we're also focused on closing the achievement gap and creating equitable outcomes for all students. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about why ROP and career technical education is a great support for all students in just a minute. The county office, like I said, is supporting us in a four-year transition plan. We are committed to maintaining our rich CTE offerings. Currently, there are 1,017 students in 40 ROP courses across our district. We also have 17 other CTE courses in the 9th and 10th grade years that support kids in as they matriculate through different ROP sequences and pathways. This year we transitioned 3.76 FTE, six different teachers, to be from the county office to become full or become a part of our own bargaining unit. There's 21.2 FTE more that will be transitioned over the course of this process. The program costs about $1.4 million annually. That includes staff, supplies and equipment, and administrative costs. Currently, we have several magnet programs. Those are programs where students will leave their own school to go attend the program at another school. And there are many of the courses that are articulated with the community college. That means there's a sequence of courses that they're a part of that lead up to the community college. And our A to G courses where students can get A to G credit towards college readiness. 80% of students taking a college prep academic curriculum with rigorous career technical education met college and career readiness goals compared to only 63% of students taking the same academic core who did not participate in CTE. You know, one of the incredible benefits of career technical education is it's relevant. Kids get to see how they can apply their knowledge to something that has meaning to them in their life. It's not abstract, it's concrete, and it's clear. Another benefit, and I'm not going to cover all the benefits tonight, but another benefit to celebrate is that a ratio of one CTE class for every two academic classes minimizes the risk of students dropping out of school. Some of the other benefits of career technical education, ROP program, is contextualized instruction, relevance, community-based learning opportunities to apply academic instruction in an area of interest, and opportunities to explore different career pathways. Find out if that's something that kids can find out if that's something they really want to spend more time learning or not. Before I move to auto tech program, I want to invite Hal up to share with you about the GMIC program, and then Larkin Wilson, and then Barry and Marco. So I'm going to pass is the mic over there? So you can go ahead. Hal, thank you so much for being here. Can you share a little bit about your program?
See you. Turn it on and then start talking.
My name is Leif Robick, and you can tell, by the way. I'm here to thank you, actually. 18 years ago, I was a fully self-employed cabinet maker, millman, in a partnership in millwork, architecture, millwork, and cabinet making. And I decided, came to the ROP and said, I'd like to teach one class of cabinet making so I could share my experience with students of like mind. That was 18 years ago. Within a 9-year period, they expanded that to two classes and occasionally three classes. 9 years ago, the then principal of Soquel High School came to me and said, I want you to take over the program. You have the best safety record. We need somebody who has experience doing this. And so I was asked to teach full-time, and I was under an MOU from the County Office of Education. The Santa Cruz City School was covering about 50% of it. About 2 years after that, the same principal, Ken Lawrence Emanuel, came and said, we're going to start a program called GMAC. It makes us one of the few California Partnership Academies in Santa Cruz City Schools. And it's construction-based. GMAC is Green Manufacturing, Engineering, and Construction. And so in the course of creating that program, we created a cohort of students taking from both of the middle schools, taking from incoming freshmen, and asking them, are you interested in this program and getting to join the program? As part of that program, we have articulation with the two ROP classes, cabinet making and now construction technology, which I teach, are articulated with career college as well. In the course of that, 2 years ago, I became a part-time after-school teacher for Shoreline Middle School, supported by Bill Simpkins, to recreate their woodshop program, which is now back up and running again. So now we have both of our feeder schools to Soquel are teaching woodshop classes. In the course of that time period, numerous students have moved on to careers and professions, some at Dominican Hospital, some at Tesla, some at Granite Rock, some outside the area. Some have gotten degrees in architecture at Cal Poly, engineering at Drexel University, and project management at Chico State. In the course of that, Mr. Manuel and myself also created yet another program within the school, and that was an after-school campus upgrade program. We paid the students and myself to oversee upgrades of the campus facilities. So literally, when you mentioned concrete relevance, we were pouring concrete. We poured concrete, we did chain link fencing, we rebuilt the away team bleachers, we rebuilt the teacher's lounge, we rebuilt the Blue and Kale Cafe, we built an information kiosk for the 300 building, among hundreds of other projects on the Soquel High School campus. This year, we're privileged to have been invited by the Porter Street Library to come down and rebuild their deck. So the ROP construction tech class and the ROP cabinet-making class we participate in that.
Thank you.
And so again, I want to thank you, because this year I became a Santa Cruz City Schools employee, and I would like to keep yourselves an open mind for the potential of a person like myself who comes from industry, any industry, who is really interested in sharing what they have, because I didn't intend to be this far 18 years later, and I'm really glad I did.
Hello. Hi, all. Thanks a lot for having me here tonight. Like you, I didn't really intend to be in the classroom either. I started teaching two video production classes at Harbor High School, and every year they would ask me, you know, we've got this demand for more. Can you add a few more classes? And I kept saying no. But slowly but surely, they talked me into it. I teach photography and video at Harbor High School. But I just want to give you a little background about where I came from before teaching, because I think it's important for you guys to understand how we are qualified. I have a degree, BA, in film and video production from UCSC. I worked as a producer and editor in the industry since the late 90s. I continued to freelance, which was part of the reason why I held back from going full-time, but I fell in love with teaching. I fell in love with the students. And I liked having a foot in both doors, in industry and in the classroom, because I could always update my curriculum and keep it relevant for the students and keep it up to date with what we're doing in the industry. But I'm here to talk about that creating relevance for students, engaging them so that they're seeing firsthand, like writing, history, culture, art, math, science is relevant, right? In our classes, they're making those connections. In photography, yeah, it's an art, and it's a really fun class, but they're also using chemistry in the dark room, the physics of light with each exposure, math as they figure out resolutions of images depending on where they deliver them, to the web, print, screen, etc. And so, you know, in one instance, they're kind of groaning about having to do math, and I see them arguing over pixel aspect ratios and which shutter speed is the most appropriate for the project that they're doing. And it's just, that's music to my ears. And in video, it's even more involved because it's got all the nuances of photography, but at 30 frames per second. So the students, and they're also collaborating, they're writing scripts, planning shoots, presenting their work to the outside world. And so for me, the proof is really in the student engagement in our classes are just overflowing with interest. Let's face it, kids want to use the digital tools that they're so engaged with at home. They seek out tutorials online for how to write a script, how to light a scene. So of course they're excited when they come to class and they have a place where they can, you know, really shine and use those tools, where otherwise maybe they see a disconnect, you know, between schoolwork and what they're doing outside of school. So I really feel strongly that our classes help them synthesize that knowledge in all the academic areas, and not only see how the concepts are relevant, but really to allow them to put them to use in a hands-on way. And then just lastly, I kind of see my classes sort of like a black and white photo. It's not really just black and white, it's a grayscale. You know, I always have the valedictorian in my class, and then the lowest achieving student in my class, and all the shades of gray in between. And they're working together, they're collaborating, and they're creating relevance in a hands-on way. And I'm really proud of the work that we do as RLP teachers, and so thanks for letting me show up. I need to turn this off. Or
good evening, everyone. Gary Kirschen wearing my teacher hat tonight, right now, and the red button?
The one on your right.
Okay, the one on my right. Mm-hmm. So at Santa Cruz High, we've got two classes that have been high school level with mostly 9th and 10th graders, the power mechanics and the introductory on mechanics. And Matt Svoboda is currently teaching those. And I'm teaching the regional class that was ROP, and now it's one of our career technical education courses at Santa Cruz City Schools. You guys have adopted me on this. And that's maintenance and light repair. It is truly a regional program, and you can see that we're currently have 11 Santa Cruz High School students enrolled. We've got one coming from Soquel High, 5 from Harvard, 2 from SLV, 1 from Scotts Valley, 2 students from Natural Bridges High School. We've got 3 from Ponderosa, which is in the San Lorenzo Valley, and 2 from OASIS, the County Office Independent Study Program. So they come from all over. They come first thing in the morning. They stay for 90 minutes for 2 years. Then they go, well, every day they go back to their home site. But they do this for a period of 2 full school years. The curriculum culminates with a certificate, and attached to the certificate are task sheets, and it's a competency-based program. So students are evaluated based upon their performance as they're engaged in learning and showing that they can perform a variety of tasks, and there you can see it's quite detailed, and there's actually 4 sheets of those that students get checked off on over the 2-year period, and those task sheets are attached to the certificate, and it's a meaningful document that's recognized by employers locally. The curriculum is organized around national standards from an organization called NATEP. And NATEP also provides technician certification exams, and students in our maintenance and light repair course can test out and earn a wall certificate and one of those black shoulder patches that would be worn on a shop coat or jacket or a shirt in a place of business, showing that they're professionally trained and certified. We've got a state-of-the-art facility, and it would be hard to differentiate it from any of the good independent garages in town or from a dealership, except that we're a little smaller. But you can see on the left that it's a large facility. Students learn with equipment that is state-of-the-art so that they can apply the skills that they're learning in class on the job, and many students go right to work. We've got modern, that's a nitrogen machine for converting air-filled tires, a state-of-the-art wheel alignment machine with optical sensors, and our rolling stock we own vehicles that students learn to perform procedures on. And those are 2 of the higher tech vehicles that are in the program. And the bottom one is a Honda Hybrid, and the top vehicle is really high tech, but it's a 1972 Volkswagen Beetle. It's a plug-in electric car. There's no gasoline engine, and it's got a setup like a Tesla with modern batteries and a charging system, a nice range and good top speed that the students never get to see. We have industry partners that we meet with annually to advise us. And this is just the top of the minutes from the last advisory committee meeting. And these are working technicians and garage owners that we meet with and discuss where we are and where we should be going and what their needs are in the community. Students often get internship placements and volunteer community classroom placements in these facilities, and the local garages become an extension of our classroom while the students are enrolled. And that's actually a piece of the CTE program that city schools might want to consider expanding upon and developing more as we move forward in growing our programs, providing support for instructors to supervise this employment could be a very good direction for us to move. We have connections with the community who raise funds for, not for equipment so much, but for scholarships, because our students very often don't qualify for many of the scholarships that are awarded at the high school sites. But the Santa Cruz Police Officers Association, through Hot Rods at the Beach, which is coming up, looks like someone with good eyes could...
November 7th.
November 7th, thank you. Will be this year's event at the boardwalk, and it's a fun day, and it raises... We've awarded in excess of $100,000 in scholarships to the students in our classroom through this and some other connections that we've got. So we've got scholarship money to help our students transition to tech school and community college. I think that's it.
Hey, do we have some comments or questions?
We have one more. Mr. Brenner.
We'll be short. Yeah, we're only prepared for like a couple minutes. So. My name is Marco Lucadano, and this is Matthew Brenner. We're teachers at Suffolk High School. So we want to talk a little bit about integrating core academics at Suffolk High School. And last year, Matt and I got together to do a collaboration between his history class and my graphic design class. And so I wanted to take you into the classroom and give you guys a peek at what it looked like from a student perspective. So here's Matt working with some students. Matt wanted to work with Arsons doing a World War I infographic poster design. And so we teamed up small groups, his students and my students, to create this infographic poster that was going to reach across a bunch of different tools, mostly digital tools where kids would get together and share information with messaging, texting, email, and Google Drive. So as I mentioned, the Matt students did all the research through his rubric and his lesson design, and then they came together with mine. We actually got all 60. We got 60 students into my room so that they could work in small groups together, and kind of like a client relationship where his students were clients and my students listened to all the criteria that they wanted, and then they worked together to put together the infographic poster. So that's kind of a big shot, a wide-angle shot. So the neat thing about this project was that it's student-centered with a huge emphasis on communication and sharing information, as I mentioned before.
with the common goal of using the research that the students have done, the technology that we have, graphic design principles and techniques to visually communicate comparative data about history. This is a sample of what they came up with. So they took all the information and then synthesized it into electronic format. And when Barry mentioned state of the art, I wanted to, I think it's really, really important for the board to understand how important it is to have these state of the art tools so that the students know what they're getting themselves into. They get a real taste for what it's like to use a digital single lens reflex camera, scanners, modern up to date computers, drawing tablets, and working with people who aren't familiar with that in order to create something like this. And what I'm trying to do is we're trying to move away from this kind of thing. It's great for elementary school and middle school, but this is not what we do in the modern industry or what you folks do in your jobs when you have to create presentations and graphics. This is really nice, but why do this when they can do this? I'm going to let Matt speak because I'm too nervous to keep doing this.
So coming from a content, whatever you want to call it, core curriculum class, the benefit to my students was gigantic. Number one, they were working with older students, so my kids were all sophomores, and Mark, I'm pretty sure your kids were basically all seniors and some juniors. Right off the bat, to have some upperclassmen working with younger kids is already a benefit, and then to have my students required to do quality research and bring it to his class with some sort of idea, and for them to come together and create this, which is a representation of that collaboration in visual, physical form. They actually, we printed all of these out and they are up in my classroom as real physical proof of collaboration. And I still get kids coming in to my class and looking up and getting that validation that they did something that was, I guess, whatever buzzword you want to use, authentic or what have you, this is the definition of this assignment. So I think as content teachers, sometimes we get caught up in the fact that we have to get through all of the material, we have to get, as a history teacher, we have to make it past the Cold War. That's our goal. If we make it there, we've succeeded in the year. No one makes it past the end of the year. But I think taking a step back and realizing that doing a project like this, while it costs time, the time that we spend doing this, it really didn't cost actually that much time at all, but in the end, and it was super, super gratifying for all the kids involved. I think sometimes content teachers, history, the core curriculum, we sort of either, I don't know, we maybe lose focus a little bit and tend to regard our classes as I don't want to say more important, but maybe that's the case. I think we need to take a hard look at these courses that we're offering kids, because oftentimes they are so excited to be in there, and if we can institute some of our curriculum and bring it into those classes, then they take it from there. Because we basically gave them the space, gave them the tools, and that was it. And we were sitting there what do we do now? Because they are just working. Which as a teacher is, a beautiful, wonderful thing to have that work. So, I wanted to make sure that I was here tonight to represent the other side of the equation, the whatever core curriculum. I'm not entirely sure what I'm supposed to call it, history, social studies, science, or whatever. But, That's why I'm here, because I truly think that projects like this are valuable, and I hope that I can convince my colleagues and all of you that these classes have to stay at high schools, and they offer, yeah, for truly valuable experiences for kids. So thank you.
Hey, thank you all for your presentations. And now I think we have questions. Jeremy?
Right, I have a number of questions. Barry, first of all, it's so gratifying to hear directly from teachers, so thanks, Chris, for inviting these wonderful teachers to speak with us. And thank you for being here. Barry talked about his numbers, but I would love to hear very briefly from Hal and Larkin, an ex-student of mine, what your numbers are like, not in terms of total enrollment, but I noticed, Barry, you had 11 students from Santa Cruz High School and only one from Harbor. You're located, of course, at Santa Cruz, only one from Harbor and one from Soquel, I believe.
Yeah, and it really varies from
right.
year to year.
And I'm wondering, so my first question, and then I'll come back to the others, is that your experience, Hal and Larkin, as well, that the vast majority of your students are from the site where you're at, and Marco as well, or do you actually get students from the other sites?
Years ago, when I first started teaching ROP, yes, I received students from both Soquel, both Harbor and Santa Cruz, and occasionally from SLB. ROP has created programs on those campuses, so there's workshop and construction on those classes on the campus. And because of the scheduling where my classes have been, I've not received students from those schools probably for the last 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. All of my students are so, but my classes are full, so it's not an issue in terms of that.
My classes are, I'd say, 99% Harbor High students. I have had students, I used to get some students from Soquel before they started their own photography class. And it's great because, you know, it requires the traveling and the alignment of schedules. School schedules didn't always work. Sometimes I have Costa Nova students. I've had students from various campuses, but the vast majority of them are Harbor, and they're all full classes and overflowing. I have kids still coming in asking to add the class, you know, and they get put on the wait list for the next year, but predominantly Harbor.
Thank you.
And for 5 years, I had 2 sections of graphic design. They were full with 30 students or more, and some would come from alternative ed placements. And also foreign exchange students as well. So we already have at least 2 or more foreign exchange students. And the numbers were so great that Principal Gail Lansky had another section of graphic design, and then 2 digital photography classes, which are all full. And there's always a wait list. There's kids that are coming asking. They come in the middle of the class trying to get into the courses.
Is that good? This year was a surprise to me. With GMAC Academy, it starts of the freshman year with sorting. We have 2 freshmen this year, one who went to Mission Hill, who's specifically coming to Soquel High School now to be in the GMAC Academy, and 3 actually who chose Soquel over Harbor because of the chance of being in the Academy. So in a sense, it's being built from the bottom up now. I think that's really important rather than necessarily, we're becoming sort of a magnet for students to come specifically to Soquel to be in the GMAC Academy.
Thank you.
Sheila?
Well, I mean, I didn't think that I could get more enthusiastic than I already was about ROP. Tonight really made me even more enthusiastic. I have a daughter who took 4 ROP classes while she also was taking the college courses that she needed. And the ROP classes were what completely lit her up in terms of what she could do in the world so that she could manage to get herself through college. A lot of her friends, their careers are based on things that they started with ROP. So I've always been very enthusiastic about this, but you folks all made me even more so. I've had my car fixed by one of Barry's students because my car mechanics use his students, and that's the student that did it has gone on in the field to have all the certifications to do everything he could in order to be an auto mechanic. I've I've seen the latest film of the not-to-be-named thing that I'm not supposed to talk about that was done by your students.
Yes.
And it was fantastic. My daughter picked it up, and she sent it viral through all of her friends because they were all so excited about it. I mean, I think it's the level of excitement that is, you know, so dramatic to me. And I usually ask people, teachers, when I talk to them, if you could do what you wanted to do, if you could, you know, if we said, go ahead, what can you invent that you haven't already seen? What would you do? And I think that tonight, from you guys, I heard a great answer for us to think about in the future in terms of looking more to how we can bring the two classes together. But I would like to, I don't want to take the time tonight, but I would like to invite you to let me know if you have an idea of something that you would like to be able to do, if it was just possible. And then I have one question, which is, have you, I know that I found out much too late, because I didn't have my dog anymore, that the animal, whatever they call it, the vet science one, you could bring your dog there. And so I'm wondering, when you were talking about you do the cabinet stuff for Soquel High, when I was a student at Loma Prieta ever so many years ago, I won't say how long because it makes me tell you how ancient I am, but we used to, the woodshop class used to hire out to make things for people, and I'm wondering if you do that.
Yes, we do.
That's great. So you should advertise it, because I think that if the community heard what we heard tonight, that there would be so many people who would light up so enormously.
The only reason we don't advertise is I come from industry, and I don't want to compete with people in my industry.
That makes sense.
So what we do is teachers come to us, people come to us, and the school, and quite frankly, the school district's done a great job of keeping us busy. It doubles your budget, because if you want to buy a shelf, you pay us, we get curriculum, you get a shelf. Mm-hmm. It doubles your budget in that respect. So, now thank you for that. And yes, we will keep ourselves, and individual students will take on projects for pay under my roof, and that's not a problem. But I don't advertise because I don't want to take your business from people I'm trying to send students to.
And we do the same thing, Sheila, in my class. I'll bring clients in, that will brief the students on a certain job, we can do a logo design, we can do a poster project, flyers, and they can experience that real-life relationship, and they oftentimes get compensated. It's not always money. You know, it could be movie tickets or gift cards or something, but it's the spirit of the competition. It's the real-life tangibles that the students get to experience, and we always welcome that. So if you have any folks that need graphic design or photography work, you can send them to some of us.
Okay.
And I just want to say, it is a fact that we put Measure O on the ballot to preserve and protect career technical education in these ROP programs, because we are in a time of transition and they no longer are funded by the state through the County Office of Education, and that is why the board put this program on Measure O.
Dee,
next. I want to thank you all for your presentations. Barry, I think you mentioned that some of the skills that students are gaining from your auto tech course is thinking and problem solving, communication skills, and interpersonal skills. And I just want to comment that those are really college-level skills that are gained from all of these ROP CTE courses that you can't really teach in a regular classroom. Those are harder to teach, I should say. So I would add that I think the collaboration that happens, like in the combination of the courses and the professionalism that these students start to become aware of, are also valuable skills that are harder to teach in a regular classroom. I was just wondering if you could comment on how these kinds of courses do connect with college, because I think some people assume that these courses are an alternative to college-going
you know, endeavors, but I really see them as going hand in hand, and these can really turn kids on to college because they can see, here's some professionals that are out there in the world and have used these skills in the industry, but they've had to go to college to gain some of those valuable skills.
Well, I could comment on that because these programs articulate with the community colleges, and students are receiving community college credit when they're admitted based upon the articulation agreements. So students can start at Hartnell with 5 credits for maintenance and light repair, which is a course taught there. We are teaching the exact same program. And then the students transition to engine repair and drive lines and heating and ventilation and the other 8 areas within this nationally certified curriculum.
When I mentioned the universities involved, the young woman who went through the GMAC program went to Drexel University. While she was at Drexel University as a freshman, they found out she'd been in this program. She showed her a video from our program. And immediately she was sent to a different group to talk to different people. Because not only do they not get people who have hands-on skills in engineering programs, they've never seen a female with hands-on skills in these programs. So she hasn't actually graduated. She's on her track to graduate. But as a sophomore, she was already getting internships. As a junior, she was already getting employment in the engineering field based on the hands-on experience of building and problem-solving in our academy and our ROP programs. That's one example of many more.
Yeah.
I think one of the things across classes that we always try and teach is right, critical thinking, reasoning, and these sorts of skills are certainly like just beyond measure present in all these classes. And in this collaboration project, I mean, the problem solving and comes along with interpersonal skills. It's learning how to work in a group. It's learning how to be a human around other humans, which I think builds like just the empathy that's needed to be good at anything. And so, like, as far as critical thinking and the skills that we're teaching in my class, they are obviously, and you guys can speak more to this, but, you know, if you're taking a photograph and trying to figure out how, where, and all the other problems you have to solve, right? I mean, those are similar tasks to reading a primary source in a history class. It's a matter of how you solve the problem. So I may not have articulated that as well as I wanted to, but hopefully it came across correctly.
I just want to add that I have a returning students, so now I've been doing this for a few years, so I have students that come back to keep in touch. And there's several students I had that have gone to UCLA for art and design or fashion design, and the common theme that comes back is that, Mr. Luke, I learned so much in your class that I use, that I know so much more than the other kids do. You got me ready for this, and I can skip over this and that. You were the best at teaching blah, 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 all this stuff that you love to hear, but there it is right there. The students are telling you that they're getting learning the competencies and getting the skills that they need. A lot of soft skills that they'll take and use, like Matt said, the critical thinking, but also skills that they wouldn't get unless they were actually working in the job or profession, getting their hands on the tools and working with people in the industry.
I just want to echo that too. Kids coming back, sharing that very story about being at college and saying, you know, I had to take 3 college courses before we covered what you did in the second semester, you know. But I think you had a slide early on that showed that you see A to D, how many of our courses, just to get back to your original question, these aren't just alternative classes. They are satisfying college requirements. They, I think it was one of the first ones, maybe, Chris, that you showed.
It was like number 4.
Yeah.
Back away.
I think there are a lot of people who don't know that. That they're taking these courses, not only are they articulated, but they are satisfying, you know, that UC A to G requirement in these courses. So
there you are.
There it is. There's quite a few of them.
Can I just add a comment that my son has been in a number of these classes, and it's really helped him figure out his major when he goes to college. So thank you for that.
Hey, Allison and Patty and Kisses.
I feel like Sheila. I didn't think I could get more enthusiastic and excited about ROP, but I did after tonight's presentation, so thank you all. I've had the good fortune of being able to sit in and watch some of the video productions kids when they are creating, and I look forward to Harbor's end of the year video every year. And one of the comments that I wanted to make is it kind of connects with what Dr. Logsdon brought up at the beginning of us being better at showcasing what we do. We're good at talking about where kids get accepted into college, but I think we should capture that data around the ROP pathways. Into secondary, into four-year institutions, into industry, into the workforce, into technical preparation programs, and start to sort of celebrate the foundation that they're building in these classes. And I also think it would be a way to publicize to the community the amazing work that's going on. It's sort of one of the best-kept secrets, I feel like, sometimes. When I was watching the three ROP students working and I was talking to them, I think they had been in your class 3 years, they said they were all going to film schools. They were seniors applying for college, and all of them were going to study film. And I said, did you know that when you took art? And I'm like, no, I took video productions because it sounded like fun. So, yeah, I'd like to see us broadcast that the good work that you all are doing so that the public knows more about it.
The one odd path that I wanted to share very briefly was it's kind of interesting because a student of mine did nothing but build stereo speakers in my class for cars. Left the high school with his own business building stereo speakers for cars. Mm-hmm. 4 years later, he came to me and said, Robic, I want to talk to your class. I want to talk to your class. A company in San Jose wanted to hire me. I set up my own business. They bought my business and hired me. I'm working on Lamborghinis. I'm doing very well. So he's got to talk to your class. I said, sure, Facebook me. So I went to his Facebook page. I looked into his employment, and it said sound engineer Tesla.
No.
And I went, wait a minute, you told me you worked for so-and-so. Well, Tesla snatched me. He's sound engineer for Tesla. We're trying to get to tour his facility now based on him. He doesn't have a degree, he didn't go to college, and he's funny, he's kind of a, you know, dude. And the Tesla, he said, what's that like? He goes, well, dude, it's like, I'm with these, like, MSs and PhDs, and talking about these cars, and they look at me and think, what do you think? I mean, dude! And he's been at this now 10 years, I believe, and it just told that his pathway, he just said, make sure you tell your students to be excited for their own pathway. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because it took him to a place he did not expect. Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple questions specific towards Hal and Mr. Christian. I'm wondering how many females you have enrolled in your courses. You know, so the ratio has always been traditionally males take these classes, but I did take shop in high school because my brother told me to take it and didn't realize that it was all, there weren't any women in the class. And so I'm happy to hear, I know who that student is at Drexel, and I'm very happy to hear that report out. And I'm just wondering what we're doing to attract more, to show the benefits of what they can do in the sciences through what they learn. And, you know, as we've talked about the practicality of it, more so the bridge of it in our college piece. So can you tell me?
I took three last year. And one of them is working at the Firestone store on Water Street now, half-time, and cutting hair half-time, because she also took cosmetology through the early days. So that was last year. I've got three in the class this year. So out of 27.
27, okay.
I happen to know one of Mr. Kirshen's students. She's in her second year of the auto program, and she's very happy, and she's looking forward to the certificate and a career as an auto mechanic. She's a personal friend of mine, and her family. So, and you saw her red hair on the video here just a little while ago. Her name is KK Dorina.
Delightful person, Jim.
This is an advantage to an academy, just so you understand. We begin drafting in the freshman year, which creates something called the wheel, which is all the freshmen come. Those are two of mine. we created the wheel where freshmen come in by request and they take the wheel, they take the wood shop for a quarter of a half a semester and the metal shop for half a semester as freshmen. And then we work with them and then we've got to talk to them. Did you like this? Did you not like this? And then we go out and draft. I actively recruit females, as you understand that. Right now we're at our highest group, I think. How many is in your class? The three in the senior class, we have, I believe, four or five in the junior class, about five. It's a very small sophomore class, but I believe there's four in that class. And the freshmen are looking very promising for next year. I deliberately recruit. I look at my mother shot down German aircraft in the Second World War for the British Army. I was very affinity to that. And my sister paid her way through law school as a carpenter. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's very important that we have I use the word female, it makes people angry sometimes, but we have the female component in my program, in our program, and we want to grow that component. Because we watch how it affects the student base. It changes student base in the class. It changes, I quite frankly think, forgive me guys, women are much better at this than men are. Sorry. But they bring a sense of community to the group. They bring a sense of settlement to the group and focus to the group. And like I say, if I could get to a one-third, I would be a very happy person in my environment. So we are actively recruiting for that.
Well, and that answered the dynamics of what can happen in a classroom.
Yes.
Sometimes with 36, 15-year-old boys, it can be difficult. They're growing. They move differently. Sometimes it needs just a little bit more. So I wanted to know to that. Thank you. I'll ask my next.
Okay, Sheila.
I keep seeing this young man raise his hand. Oh, he has something to say.
Okay, please.
Introduce yourself.
So I'm Stuart. I go to Soco High.
I'm Brett. I'm also Soco High.
Yeah. So we're both GMX students and I think ROV, yeah. ROV students as well. I also take Mr. Lucadano's graphic design class. And I just want to say, for having, girls in our class, at the beginning, you're at a shop, and you're like, you traditionally think, oh, all guys, but when you see girls in there working, you kind of gain respect and stuff. So, like, at the beginning, we have a set of 30 or so kids throughout freshman year to senior year, and there's been the three girls who are in our GMAT senior class, and we've developed, a really close relationship with them. Like, they're our sisters. We're all brothers, kind of deal. It's like a big family. And I think that helps a lot with this academy in itself.
I've worked with all three of the females in the GMAC Academy, and some of the ideas they come up with in problem solving is I would not have expected from any of the guys.
We go the easy route, and they go oh, how about this? And they're like, oh, okay. I also want to say, with business and stuff, doing work for outside companies, I've started in Mr. Rovick's wood shop class. I've started my own little business. I mean, it's not legit. I don't have, big names or anything. But I've made certain, customer projects for just random people who want, cutting boards or shelves or something. I've gone and made it and sold it to them, and it's helped me a lot. And I'm working on my OSHA certificate. It's a 10-hour process, and it's scary. But Mr. Rovick told me that it helps a lot when you're trying to get a job, especially in the field that I want to get, and that's the whole reason I'm in ROP and in GMAC itself. And I believe ROP, for the right student, is the best thing, education-wise, for anyone. And I just thought hearing that from a student would be good. But
Last year, during my junior year, I took ROP welding with Ms. Lori Hildebrand. And at the end of the year, we were asked to comprise a portfolio of our work. And I went on to win the scholarship that ROP offers for the portfolio. And my portfolio has gotten me jobs already. I think it's great because in schools, you know, nowadays, I would love to be taught how to balance a checkbook or how to do taxes. I've had teachers help me do my taxes already. And I think those skills should be incorporated into Common Core. And in GMEC, I learned how to do my resume sophomore year. And it's a pretty good resume.
I think with ROP and academies, we develop a sense of family, in my opinion. Like, you get close with the students, you get close with each other, you learn how to, if you're like, oh, I don't like you, at the halfway through the year, you're like, oh, hey, you're not that bad.
What are your plans after you graduate?
For me, myself, I work at Pleasure Pizza, and so I'm just kind of not wanting to go anywhere, but I'm going to go to Cabrillo, work on construction management, get my, for Cabrillo, and then I'm going to hopefully transfer to Chico and take their construction management class. I've heard it's one of the best in the state. From there, who knows? I am a senior, but it's far away, but like, rather than it's kind of scary.
And then I'm currently on the delayed entry program for the United States Marine Corps.
Oh, wow.
But after I get out of the Marines, I'm going to become a machinist.
Very cool.
Just briefly, the Chico, he's going to Chico, a former ROP student graduate from Chico, the bridge by Harbor High School. Mm-hmm. He was the project manager at age 24 for the bridge from Harbor High School across.
The La Fonda Bridge?
Yeah, he works for Granite Rock now. And so he came to the ROP program, went to Chico, got his degree in construction management, and was a project manager for Granite Rock for that bridge at age 24.
Wow.
Yes, one more thing, because I probably don't want to take a little too much time. GMAC and we have a class called Capstone, which is it gears you towards college. But we're working on a gazebo for second quad. It's our own little project. We got it through the schools and stuff. We have some outside company, like contractors, we're going to come in and do some paving inside, and we're going to build this nice gazebo for the students to hang out in the second quad. And we have these cinder blocks, and we're hoping that once everything's done, that we can make little planter boxes out of them and have plants and stuff growing as you walk towards the gazebo. We're trying to turn this like kind of desolate looking area, like dirt and grass, what used to be grass, green grass and stuff until the drought. But hopefully turn it into something that looks nice, and we can walk in the second quad and be like, oh, I want to hang out here, instead of walking in the second quad and be like, I want to get to the next building.
It takes it back to freshman year when we get a draft.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. It was really nice to get a student's perspective. Sheila?
Well, you guys, your excitement just like sent me over the top. But you were talking about your sister making it through college.
My sister has a law degree. She went to Cornell University.
Yeah.
Paid her way as a carpenter.
As a carpenter. And I think it's a story that people forget when we talk about, well, they have to go to college right away. Not everybody goes to college right away. Lots of people get careers and then make their way to college. And what I like about ROP is that it gathers both of those. And that also means that those kids get to talk to each other. So I'm very enthusiastic about what you're doing from that point of view. And I want a robust program for all of our students. And you guys know, and I know, that there are a lot of the students who are not walking out the door of high school and going to college, and who need to have a direction and an understanding about what life has to offer. And didn't these guys sound like they have that? I mean, it was so great to listen to you, because the feeling that you understand what life's about and that you're learning things. I would love to see us having resumes and career days and all of that kind of stuff. I'd like to see us treat careers as well as we treat, you know, going to college. But one thing I just wanted to mention that Chris and I talked about, and I can't remember the name of it. Articulation is one thing that happens at Cabrillo, but we were talking about how we would wish that we could also make it so that the courses they have in ROP actually go for credit at Cabrillo towards...
They do.
They do?
Yes.
They do now?
Yeah.
Do they know? Yeah. Some of them do. We'd like them all to. because, you know, I had the problem of my daughter and her friends, they would take a course and then they would have to go take something like that again. And that slowed them down because they could actually make their way into a two-year course. And then what people do when they get to two-year, sometimes just they go for four. Sometimes they go for the law degree. But, you know, you want them to feel like they have a place in life. So I'm really very thankful for what you've done. And I've, the stories I've heard tonight about what you are doing are really exciting to me. So thanks.
Thank you.
Two things. I really do think the school board needs to think about the idea of a unified schedule. If we've got these fantastic ROP classes that are offered, for example, Hal's program, Soquel High, and we want to maximize utilization, then a unified schedule would be something we need to think about. I know that Harbor and Soquel are essentially aligned, but Santa Cruz is not. It's just a thought. And then the second one is that, you know, I've been thinking about this $1.4 million ROP or career tech commitment as a financial burden, but it's also an opportunity in that it will allow us to have our own independent, comprehensive ROP plan. And was it Hal or Larkin or Marco, I forget, or Barry who mentioned that students are choosing from the ground up where they want to attend. We may need to have some conversations about that. In terms of, we have three comprehensive high schools, but if you're interested in this particular career path, you might consider going to this school. The other idea would be that we unify things and make it easier for students to go there. So those are two things I'd like the board to keep in mind as we go forward. The idea of at least talking about a unified schedule and the idea of beginning to formulate our own comprehensive plan, which we don't have. It's just grown organically. Yeah, so thank you.
Yes. We've applied twice now, and I'm not sure how much San Jose Schools has been involved. We applied for a grant with Cabrillo. I can't remember the name of the grant now. It's $250 million.
Pathways Trust.
Yes, and we have not gotten it twice in a row. I think a conversation would be really a good thing. It seems to be coming top down from Cabrillo. It really should be a conversation with this group of teachers and people about what we want to put together. You're talking about, because we've gotten to the middle schools now. I have ideas to go to the elementary schools, which is what this trust is about. It's having elementary school exposures and introductions to things. That's one point. Second point is I think you really need to discuss the fact of how do we create a transportation system that moves them between the three high schools efficiently, whether it work with Santa Cruz Transit Authority, something like that, because some of the problem is transportation between classes as well. And so those are, you know, I'm completely in support of your topic of getting us aligned schedule-wise. I think that's true. And I think some type of transport for the younger students who can't quite, you know, transport by their own vehicles would be also very beneficial. Then you could concentrate your resources, like Barry's automotive courses. That's concentrated. Yeah, that's a good thing. Then the construction courses could be concentrated, and the medical and the digital could be concentrated. Well, digital is obviously carrying its own load in every school, so that's good. But courses that don't necessarily could draw from the other school districts and other areas if you had that in place.
Jeremy, if I can speak to the funding issue as well.
Yes, please.
Barrow kills us in comparison as far as Perkins funding and having sequences and academies. So when you have these disjointed or small sections that aren't sequences, we don't qualify on Perkins funding. But once you have two courses that are in sequence, then you can immediately be eligible for Perkins funding. So that can take a huge burden off of.
You're educating me, and I really appreciate that. I had a follow-up question inspired in part by what you said and also what Hal said, and that is we haven't heard from our teachers at Mission Hill or B40, and I don't even know, and forgive my ignorance, what the quality of our once wonderful woodshop programs are there. So that's another thing we're going to need in the grand scheme of things to take a look at. I guess I don't, I'm afraid to ask.
I'm hearing good things. Mm-hmm.
Okay, a lot to think about. Thank you.
Yep.
Up from the bottom.
I just want to express my gratitude to our teachers who have had a really, really long day and are here this evening. And I want to thank our students who came and joined us to share about what's happening in your classrooms every day. The things that happen in your classrooms every day are the most important part of your why we exist. And thank you for bringing that to us here tonight. And we appreciate you being here, and as we move on to our next item before we introduce, and I'm not introducing this one, I also want to thank the other teachers who are here, who are going to be here for this semester.
Thank you.
Okay, 5-minute break.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Come visit us.
Okay.
5-minute break.
I am very tall. Yes.
Amazing.
How about the point about this here? I mean, you're doing everything up from Cabrillo down.
Good job. Thank you. I saw your daughter in the play.
Oh, yes, but she was hysterical.
It was so
I'm like, wow, you play a really good drunk person. That's what I worry.
But she looked like a, you know, she looked way too comfortable. She looked like a, you know, a 60-year-old woman. Yeah. She was absolutely brilliant.
They do such a great job.
What a strong cast.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. These kids, well, it's kind of like the same way with the RP kids. They grow up 4 years, and they leave, like, they're getting this, like, performing arts.
Yeah.
Preparation.
I get a lot of those kids. It was fun to see
all
of
Emma,
them.
Emma,
there, yeah, she was fantastic. There's, I had
Hiya.
Quiet.
She's,
yeah,
one,
she's,
yeah,
in my photography class. And Alon, uh-huh, and Garrett, and I had some kids who are in the crew backstage, some kids from last year, Guy. But anyway, it was funny because then the next night, my husband's cousin had his first feature film in the Carmel International Film Festival, so we went down and saw that. It was a beautiful film, but it was essentially the same story, only really depressing, about, like, missed opportunities and, you know, unrealized dreams and a family unit, you know. It was kind of the same story, but not a comedy at all. You know, so it's interesting to go one night and see the kids on stage and that, but...
I say to my daughter all the time, like, it's just a really great environment. You know, it's like,
Well, anyway,
great to see you. Yeah, thanks again for all your work. Yeah. I've got a nice card that I'm going to
send you. Oh, the kids were so excited about your video, which is all
crying. They kept coming over and over. I'm like, of course I'll feed you. This is a professional job.
Thank you.
Switched off and put adults in adult ed. Mm-hmm. Just think how much fun that would be.
Fun.
I would love it. If they can't actually have us as adult ed, maybe they could just have us there to demonstrate, and then we could learn. I mean, honest to God, why did they keep adults from it? I never got to take woodworking.
I know.
Home ec.
I want to
home ec. Exactly. Exactly.
Are we ready, Chris?
Yes.
All right, our next item on the agenda is 8.3.2, staff report, students achieving independence and life success, SAIL program.
It is my great pleasure to welcome our Director of Special Education, Stacey O'Farrell, and the Harvard team that is supporting our SAIL program, teachers and staff tonight. And I wanted to say before I turn it over to Stacey, I had an opportunity to sit in on their collaboration a few weeks ago and came away just so impressed by the knowledge, the skill, the commitment, the caring that this group brings. And with all of their individual skills, they are working as a team, problem solving together to see how best to support students who often have a real unique set of challenges and an equal amount of strength. So we're so excited to have you here tonight sharing with us your program.
Thank you, Angela, and thank you. It's so exciting to be here tonight. I've never been more excited to be doing a board presentation. Angela opened that up just the way I was going to. If you think about in your life, professional or personal, a team that you've been on that has been successful, that has worked well together, She can think back and remember that feeling of collaboration and trust and energy and shared vision and commitment to a common goal. What you're going to hear tonight is from a team that is just like that. I get goosebumps right now thinking about it. It's been a professional privilege and thrill to work and support this team and the work they're doing to support our students. And I'm excited for you to hear from them. So in the board memo, I gave you kind of a history of this program, so I'm not going to go into detail about that because it kind of shows the timeline and how we've come to be supporting these students. But I did want to give you a little bit of a big picture about the continuum of service options for students. I've presented before about special education. There's 13 different areas of disability. And students are not placed in this particular program because of a particular disability. Students can have a variety of supports depending on what they individually need. And we're always wanting to support students in the least restrictive environment possible. Back when special ed law was initiated, it was that at that time, students with disabilities were excluded completely from school. So the spirit of the law always encourages us to have students placed in the least restrictive environment possible. So students that we serve primarily in this program are students that have emotional disturbance or they qualify in that area. Primarily. They have challenges, mental health challenges, behavioral challenges that have gotten in the way of them being successful at school. And when you look at the continuum, it kind of goes from left to right. Students with these challenges could be supported in general ed with related services like counseling. They could be supported in a general ed class with some support from a special education teacher. They could be in a therapeutic special day class, which is what the SAIL program is, or the more restrictive is a residential treatment facility. And actually, ironically, Stacy and I just got back from visiting a student today in Utah. So when you look at the continuum, we're right there, the last stop before a residential placement or a non-public school. Mm-hmm. So this team that you're going to hear from tonight has really done amazing work to improve the outcomes and the lives of students that have really had challenges on comprehensive campuses and in traditional programs. And with that, I'm going to pass it to them. You're going to hear mostly from them tonight. So I'll introduce Stacy LeCavin, our program specialist, and she's going to start to talk.
Yeah, great. Hi, you guys. I echo what Stacy just said. It's really nice to be here, and my role is going to be to sort of tell you the story of how this program has evolved over, this is our third year. In year one, we were taking over, it was our first year taking over this program. It had previously been a county-run program, and we took it back. It's now a district-run program, and I'm really, really proud to be a part of this team. I'm here to support them, but it's an amazing group of staff that come together to really serve some of our very most at-risk students. And the successes that we've had are amazing. And the challenges that we have just bring the team together in a collaborative way. And like Angela said, it's really impressive to see the skills that our team has. In the first year, we were really taking over the program and continuing the model that had been in place when the county ran the program. But as we started to go through the school year, we were really looking at data that helped us to determine how successful our students were in the program. Some of the things that we were looking at as we looked at the program efficiency and student progress was some of the behavior data, looking for decrease in the frequency or the extent to which the behavior was getting in the way of their learning. And so we collected the behavior data. We were looking at their grades and their credit completion rate. Because some of these students, as you can imagine, they're often coming to us already credit deficient, and some of their mental health challenges make progressing through the high school program in a typical way more challenging. And then also attendance data, how often they were coming to school, absences, things like that. After really looking at that, we decided that we wanted to start making changes, that the students that we were working with in the program needed more from us,
than what had existed previously. And we started researching some more effective programs. We wanted to create a model that was based on research that we could look at that would give us the greatest likelihood of having a positive impact and with this group of students. So we started with attending a presentation that was done by Diana Browning Wright, who is really known nationwide as a true expert in student behavior and really creating positive changes in that area. And she sort of introduced us to this idea of RTI, behavioral RTI, in restrictive settings. And that's sort of referring to that idea of therapeutic placement. So that was kind of like the spark that started the change. From there, we went and we looked at other programs throughout the state that were implementing Diana Browning Wright's ideas around behavioral RTI. We took a team of therapists, teachers, administrators, and we visited various programs, one in San Joaquin, one in Manteca, and San Gabriel. And we found the San Gabriel one probably was the one that we really learned the most from. We saw that and we thought, they are having a great impact on students and we want to do something like that. Towards the end of that year one, we talked to the students and kind of got, we wanted to rename it, you know, calling it the ED program or the therapeutic program. We wanted to reflect more of like the positive idea we had of what we wanted to do with students. And students and staff came up with the idea of SAIL, which is students achieving independence and life success, because that's what we hope that our students will have through this program. Year two kind of brought us back with a lot of energy and excitement about what we were going to create. And it was really the beginning, I think, of the current program we have now. What we did is we restructured roles and responsibilities based on what we had learned from our program visits and the research that had been done by Diana Browning Wright. We increased the responsibility of our instructional techs to intervene in the classroom. We see them as a crucial part of this team, and they receive training and get feedback from staff so that their interactions with students are effective and positive and help to create positive change. We also changed the delivery in terms of we use a district psychologist, school psychologist, and one MFT that's hired by the district. And that is assigned solely to the program, and they are an integral part of the team. And we're really lucky to have the psychologist and the MFT that we have working with us now. We implemented weekly collaboration meetings. That's what Angela participated in. Where our certificated team in year two would come together, review student data, look at what changes might need to be made in terms of behavioral approaches. That was really an important part of what we do. And we also implemented monthly training and feedback for the instructional techs to make sure that they received the training they needed so that they could be as effective as possible. We also made some structural changes within the actual classrooms. In order to really implement this kind of program, we needed things like a private setting for our therapists and psychologists to be able to do counseling with students. And that didn't exist in that current classroom. So we built an office so that therapy could take place there. And also bought furniture and created another important component, which is our opportunity room. And you'll hear more about that from our staff. And we fully implemented the TIERS model, which is the RTI behavioral model that Diana Browning Wright, which includes a point level system and honors and opportunity room. So that takes us to year two. We're going to go into a little more detail about the program, and then we'll kind of sum it up with like where we're at now in year three. And so I'm going to introduce it to Tracy. She's our behaviorist and an amazing part of the team that we have over at Harvard.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about some of the components that are unique to our program. We use the TIERS model, which might look familiar to you if you're familiar with PBIS or behavior RTI or even academic RTI. This is for restrictive settings, so our SAIL program is restrictive. So here's what we use. The Tier 1 is for all of our students, and what's unique to our program is that we offer a weekly social-emotional curriculum and social skills training. We also have good classroom management, we follow these, you know, 16 classroom management strategies that Diana Browning Wright has recommended in her program. If students don't respond to our tier one system, then they would move up a level. So if they need more intensive intervention, then they would be considered a tier two student. So they would have things like a self-management system that they would use, frequent home communication, maybe check in, check out. They might also have something we call a class pass. So it's a way for them to leave the class in a more appropriate way instead of just, you know, leaving when they think it's necessary. We also might do small group social emotional learning or social skills training with just a few students. If those students still are not responding to our tier two interventions, then they would move up to tier three. And that's where we would do behavior assessments followed up by behavior intervention plans. We would do one-on-one cognitive behavior therapy with our school psychologist or our program therapist. We would also, and we have worked with other agencies for wrap services, so that might look like another agency that we partner with coming into the home and doing parent counseling or other support for the student. There's also a strong component with our school psychologist and our program therapist for parent training, as well as the services they might receive outside of school. So that's our tiers system. The level system, it starts on the bottom with restricted. So this is our lowest level in our system, and these students receive the most supervision within the program. And they need to have their breaks and lunch supervised by adults in a particular classroom. If they are recommended to move up after a certain number of days, kind of proving themselves in the restricted level, then they would move up to supervised, where they're out maybe in the quad with supervision from staff, and they have a few more access to privileges. And then our independent level is our they get the greatest access to privileges, so they're allowed to, you know, have breaks and lunch like other students that are on the general campus. And then after a certain amount of days and, you know, behavior contracting, they might have an opportunity to be like the other students and maybe get to go off campus for lunch and take advantage of those kinds of things. Our honors room is it follows our point system that we have in the program, and so the honors room allows students to access reinforcers. So they need to have a certain percentage of points daily in order to take advantage of what we call kind of like our fun Friday. And they get the points by following the expectations for being safe, responsible, and respectful throughout their school day. And this room allows them to have access to things like, you know, gaming or maybe a movie that day. There's snacks involved. Things that are reinforcing that can motivate them to follow expectations throughout the week. It's also a good way to offer social opportunities that are facilitated by adults during this time. The opportunity room is a chance for students to make a better decision, essentially, if they are not following the expectations of the program. And it is a separate room where if they have a behavior such as, you know, aggression towards another person or possibly a threat of violence, that they would go here, and it gives them an opportunity to gain back compliance by doing a certain amount of work at their level, and then also thinking about their behavior by filling out a sheet and then speaking with an adult about a better way to handle it next time. And then the motivation system is essentially our token economy system, which is another evidence-based thing that we use with the students. And it is like points are given throughout the day, throughout each period, that give them reinforcers to access at our student store, which is just another way of positively reinforcing them for good behavior. And so Eli's going to talk about our behavior data and just giving an example of our student schedule.
So this is a graph of kind of, we take data constantly throughout the day, and as a teacher in the classroom, we're giving more praise, we try to give more praise than not, but if they're not following the program, then there's consequences, you know? And so they get to know it and they get to see it. So as the day progresses, they're earning points. And they start out with 100%, they get an A, and then, you know, they can kind of move down from there. So this is, a lot of our techs in our class keep the data as we're going, so it's constantly being taken so that we can analyze it, which is very nice. So we get graphs like this at the end of each month, and we can kind of see how the student's doing and if we need to implement a Tier 2 intervention of some sort, or if they need to move up to Tier 3, or if they're ready to move down, which is the whole goal, is to get them out and to get them back onto the bigger campus. So this is what we look at each month, basically. And this is a schedule. This is like what our kids take. If it says TC next to it, then it's in our therapeutic program. So a lot of our students will take most of their classes in program, but also a lot of our students generalize into the bigger campus. So they're taking, this student here is taking an ROP class. A lot of them take general ed classes, PE, health, and some in math, some in science, you know, as they can handle it. And then we all have a therapeutic tutorial. So all students that are in our program have a last period in-house where we work on social skill curriculum and working with each other. We do a lot of like career building. We have workability come in during that time, and so we're building that piece. And then we do a lot of social interaction during that time too, just practicing that. And they can also work on their homework, and we can help them out. So it's a kind of a bridge between general ed. Yeah, so our kids take advantage of those ROP classes also.
It's a nice little segue between the ROP presentation and ours. So this year we're in year three, and we really have just sort of continued to grow each year and be reflective on what we could do different, and we're always looking at the outcomes of the students that we have in the program when we make these decisions and the data that the team is collecting on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. This year we have modified it a bit, and we actually have weekly team collaboration meetings. So all instructional techs, our teachers, our program therapists, our school psychologists are all getting together and meeting every Monday. Always an agenda, focused on outcomes, but really what we're doing is we're collaborating and talking about individual students and what's working and what's not, and getting sort of the expertise of a team to come up with ideas, and it really is exciting to listen. I realize over the 3 years how sophisticated and knowledgeable they have become just listening to their conversations. You know, to have an instructional tech say, you know, I've really been thinking about this, and this has been the consequence that we've been doing through the program, but I actually really think that that's reinforcing the behavior. So maybe we should look at it differently. And our team was, they were not having that conversation in year one. So that's really exciting to listen to. Implementing fidelity checks to ensure that all program components are in place consistently. We have 3 different classrooms and a number of staff. And so really, in order for the team and the program to be effective, we need to make sure that everybody is implementing this program every minute, every hour, every day with true fidelity. So giving that feedback is really important. Another change we have this year is that all of our teachers are BPSS certificated. What that means is they are credentialed to teach single subject classes that count towards a high school diploma. And that took us a few years to make sure that that happened, but it's a real benefit to our students. We don't have to rely as heavily on the online programs to keep kids on track to be, you know, eligible to graduate from high school. A really exciting thing I think it's important for you guys to know is that we currently have 3 students that are served through MOUs, meaning that they're coming from other districts. And what I'm hearing from other special ed folks and special ed directors is how impressed they are with our program, and really giving us the feedback of how impressive what we're doing with students really is. And some of the students we are currently, that we have in program on MOUs, actually attend districts that have their own ED programs. And they're asking us to serve their students because they see the outcomes that we're having with the students we serve. We're really kind of at a place now where I feel like we are in full implementation of an extremely powerful program for our students. We've been able to move 5 students out of this placement into a less restrictive setting, which is really exciting for our team, for the students, for their families, important for their outcomes.
And currently we have 79% of students on track to graduate with a high school diploma. When we took this program over from the county, none of the students who were seniors were really on track. We had one student that eventually did get his diploma that year, but it was an iffy time. So we did great strides in that area. For me, I've worked in the district since 1998, and I worked with a number of really amazing teams over the years. And for me, I really feel like it's a privilege to be able to sit in with the group that we have. They're doing amazing things for students, and like I said, our most needy at-risk students, they're high school students. This is kind of it in their K-12 experience. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing for them is really important, and what we're doing for them is really working. We're seeing really great outcomes for our kids. We've got a few student voices that we want you guys to hear, so you can kind of hear it from their mouths. Let me introduce you guys. We have Carmia Rios, one of our teachers in the therapeutic program, and Amanda Nicewana, she's a program therapist. They're going to share some student voices with you guys.
Okay. So we actually asked the students, just so you know what the prompt question was, we asked, how have you benefited from the SAIL program? And these were the responses that they gave us.
Well, this program helps me a lot. It helped me get back on the right track. And it helped me find out who I am as a person in life.
You have to click on the little arrow at the bottom.
If you click on it, it'll...
Well, this program helps me a lot. It helped me get back on the right track.
Is that not what's supposed to happen?
You should want you to see them.
It's me.
Our
technology problems.
Maybe we should send you the clips if we can't get it to play.
Well, this program helps me a lot. It helps me get back on the right track. It helps me find out who I am as a person in life.
We can see it, but you can't.
You see that note, Chris, about the right there, if it's not showing up on the screen?
My grades have improved since I've entered the SAIL program, and it's because the teachers get motivated, and just their help helps me, and the motivation, and all the insight they see in this case, and see how all of us have our individual learning plans, and my grades have just improved.
The second young lady that you heard, she's actually a senior, and the second young lady, she's a high school senior, and she is on track to graduate. She came to our program as a junior, and so that was a difficult transition for her, and that was one of those stories that when she arrived, it was really challenging, but I think as an IEP team, and even her family, we've really seen a lot of growth. And we've really been able to identify what the challenges are, and as a team, how can we best support her. And the last two young men, those are actually new students. They're both new to our program. One is a freshman, and one is a junior.
And the junior, I just wanted to, part of that video got cut off, but what he was saying was that he's been in other programs that try to hold on to him, and he says that this program is really trying to, and not in a bad way, but trying to get him out. Like, we really want him to graduate out of this program and move on to something else.
A couple students were not willing to be videotaped. They were a little nervous about that, but I did write down some of the quotes that they shared. So one young man said, I benefited from the SAIL program by meeting new people and by learning new things. A young lady reported that learning to cope with things, which is really, really hard for me, has been a big benefit of the SAIL program. My grades have improved, and it helps me get my work done, are other comments that students have made about the SAIL program.
Thank you all so much for being a part of this presentation. And Lisa Solano, she didn't have a speaking part tonight, but she's here. She's our school psychologist. And we wanted to acknowledge her also. So thank you, and I don't know if you have any questions that you'd like to ask.
Sure we do. Thank you, and all of you for presenting. Allison.
How many students are in the whole, I'd like to kind of get a sense of how many students and teachers and...
Okay, we have 3 teachers and 6 instructional technicians, and then the school psychologist, program therapist, and Tracy, the behavior specialist, this is not her only assignment, she's all of secondary, so middle school on up. And we started with 26 students, I think, in year one. And then this year we started with 19, and currently we have 16.
Mm-hmm. And the transition from the county program to this, it's remarkable what you've done in 3 years. It's just absolutely remarkable. cost-wise,
So on your board cover, I included the cost per student relative to the County Office of Education placement, which is $58,216 per student. Mm-hmm. Us running it ourselves, the cost per student is average of $30,000. It depends on the related services that students might need, but that's an average.
Amazing.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Sheila?
Well, I've waited 3 years for this, and I have to say it was worth it. I was wondering how this proceeded, and I'm really impressed by what you have done. I worked in New York. I was a team leader for a child and adolescent unit, and I know how hard your job is. I know that the way you could succeed is that everybody had to work together. They had to be on the same page. And they had to calmly move the students along and help them to learn about themselves. And I hear you doing that. I know it's really hard. It's really impressive that you've done it in 3 years. I was wondering, of those staff that you named, the teachers are there all the time. Is the psychologist there all the time?
She does have other responsibilities besides SAIL, but that's her primary responsibility. She also supports our Bridges program, which is a post-secondary program, and case manages students that are in non-public school placements.
So, no more Harbor High, huh?
And something that's different is when we took the program over, each classroom had a mental health therapist assigned to it. And so that was their entire job was in each classroom. And we recognized that wasn't efficient. We wanted our instructional techs to be more involved in intervening and de-escalating so that the therapist could be a step back and have more
of a therapist role.
Right, exactly. Do counseling when you have counseling scheduled and really empower the instructional techs to get in there and intervene quickly and to get the student back on track. And so that was a change that we made in our second year.
And that was one of the things that actually worked well with the county program was that they had the therapist who could play the therapist role. So I'm happy to hear that being part of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I have another question and comment, but I'm going to let other people talk and then I'll come back.
Dee
Dee? I just have a question. The slide that has the graph, I wonder if you could just help me read that a little bit.
Oh, sure. I have to go
back to that. I believe it was point, a daily point, right?
Yes, yes.
It was like the October point for students.
Yeah, so, okay.
So,
okay, this is not what's up there.
Oh, no. Okay, we can all imagine it.
Yeah,
the data.
We have it. Okay. Yeah.
My question is that's data for all of the students.
That's one student.
That's one student.
Yes.
Through the month of October.
Student's trajectory, okay. And then there's the dates down below.
Okay.
That show the percentage of points. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So daily average.
Yeah. The daily average.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's helpful. And then I have another question related to this. So at what point do you make the decision, if you were looking at this data for this one student for October, at what point, what would the graph look like if you think, oh, maybe we should move this student up to that level two or the level three? I mean, what are the thresholds in terms of daily behavior that are signals to your team that the student might need some more support?
That's a really good question. I think I'll let someone from the team answer that.
Lisa and Amanda and I look at the data every week, and we want to make a determination about every 2 weeks whether or not we need to increase the intervention. If we're going to apply a tier two strategy, we'll likely do it, 2 to 6 weeks minimum. And then after that, we might move to a tier three. We might move to tier three if there's something, if there's serious behavior that's occurring, not if it's just one incident, but if it's ongoing. We could just jump to a tier three, and we might want to do a behavior assessment or draft a behavior plan.
So in terms of the daily percentage, that student would be below 50 on more of the days of the month or something like that?
Right. So, So that, I believe, is a month of data for one particular student.
Right.
And so that's really determining kind of like what level they're on, if they're on restricted, supervised, or independent level. Their daily average and if they're going to make it to the honors room or not.
Okay.
But that data, along with some other data that we might take individually for students, will help determine which tier they're on.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, Sheila.
Okay. I seem to be the only person left, so I'll try to go fast. But I was not clear if it's they go up the tiers only if they have problems. Do they start at high level and lose it, or do they start at low level and gain it? They start on one. Okay, and they gain it over time. In the opportunity room, do you have staff in that opportunity room, or is it like quiet time for the students?
There's staff, but they're not talking or anything.
That's they're just there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the rationale to that is?
It should be boring in there.
Yeah.
We don't want them to want them to get attending
that. Yeah. Right. Right.
You can follow up with them afterwards, though, to go over the behavior and how they can do it different next time. So there's a follow-up afterwards, but then respond back.
We don't want them to be reinforced for any reason for being in the room.
Right. So it's not a place to do therapeutic work.
No,
it's a place to be boring as you can possibly be. Okay. I just wanted to give a little plug for the fact that you talk about how the team works so well. I think, Stacy, you said that. And I think that has often been true in special ed, maybe has not often been noticed. But the team often knows, the team that's on the ground knows the students and knows the needs very well. And so I kind of just like to plug for that being true across the program. And it's interesting to me that in this program, because we have to, we kind of pull the students out, whereas we're kind of advocating not pulling them out in other places. Sometimes this is needed in less serious situations. The students still need that kind of intervention that's more structured. One of the questions I had is, in my experience when I did this kind of work, the hardest thing was the moving out. In other words, the students came to know the situation very well, and over time they learned how to succeed in it. But when it was time to move them back out into the world, sometimes that didn't cover, go out with them. And I'm wondering, have you had success with that? And if, are there things you do especially to make that more successful?
So we actually have sort of a whole protocol. We have had students successfully move out to a less restrictive setting, and we have a protocol for that. And the plan involves them mainstreaming more and more and more, so that it's not just going from our program to something else. That's why we're on a comprehensive campus, so that they can have the opportunity to mainstream and then increase that, and then we're monitoring that. We have instructional techs that are going to the mainstream classes, and they are observing and monitoring for the behaviors that we're also looking at in the therapeutic classrooms. Mm-hmm. So yes, we've had great success, and I mean, we have one student that started with us and really was extremely at risk. And now to see him 2 years later mainstreamed and in a resource specialist program with minimal interventions doing amazing is, I think, one of the things that keeps the team kind of moving forward and feeling great about what they're doing. Right. When we see him stop by to say hi, and he's got friends, and he's being academically successful, and he's got a vision for his future, and we're thinking back on when we first met him, and swear words and chairs were, moving. And that's because the team wrapped around and got involved with his family, with him, gave him consistent feedback on his behavior, and taught him the skills. We look at those behaviors as skill deficits. That's why, like Eli talked about, we have curriculum. We have social, emotional, and behavioral curriculum where we're not looking at just, oh, it's a behavior. We're looking at it as a deficit. And we teach the skills they need so that that's no longer a deficit for them. So that's, I think, why the kids are successful.
And you also...
It's not just the program. It's the skills they themselves are learning.
Right. But you gave them... They had a support deficit, too. So you gave them the support. And it sounds like that... I mean, that's a nice thing about being on the campus, what out is, because it sounds like you carry that on. In other words, when they go out, somebody's keeping an eye on them. Mm-hmm. And you're able to carry the support on for as long as they need it. So I say congratulations that you've done that, because it's very, very hard to do. And I'm impressed. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for all the work that you do for our students. Really appreciate the presentation.
I didn't get to David and his administrative team are not here, but I want to acknowledge their support of us also, being on their campus and really learning and growing as we've learned and grown over the past few years. So I want to just mention that as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is a staff report, preliminary CBEDS report.
Do you want to do
now that everybody's happy, I'll bring some other type of news. Good evening, President Vestal, members of the board, Superintendent Monroe, and the public. Bringing forward to you tonight is our preliminary report of our 2015-16 CBET report. Our, basically, it's our data, the annual data collection, which we do at the school level based upon the collection day of October 7th to determine our student makeup. And so we have our preliminary figures that we'll do. We'll all go through the process of validating all the information, validating all the requests for free and reduced lunches, unduplicated accounts for English language learners, foster youth, et cetera, through this process to certify to the state by the deadline. And so we're bringing forward to you tonight, again, this is preliminary information, but it does show what movement we've had within the district as a whole. So bringing forward this very small slide, but you see it much more clear on your screens itself in front of you. But this gives you, this is just a preliminary enrollment count before I get the actual slides on the report of where we are as a district. Based upon current totals of 2015-16 compared to last year, we're down as a district of 134 students. And the makeup kind of consists of a loss of 48 students in elementary K through 5, an actual increase in our middle school area of approximately 23 students. And right now in grades 9 through 12 is a decrease of 84 students. again, preliminary CFS growth. The numbers at our alternative education sites will be influenced throughout the year, but a lot of times those numbers will come from our traditional sites. So that'll be part of the process that will come there as far as the movement that incorporates that. This will give you a little more indication of where we are per site. And I kind of changed the columns around this year just to try to get a different feel. But what you'll see, of course, first of all, is a 14-15 CBEDS count for all the individual school sites. And then compared right now directly to the 15-16 CBEDS counts. The very next column will give that differential. We talked about a decrease of 134 students. The greater effect there, of course, will be at the secondary level, our high school district, because that is a basically quote-unquote revenue limit funded district compared to a basic aid at the elementary level. On the far right, and this is where I got to give credit to my peers, and I know Superintendent Monroe and Assistant Supervisor Meeker and Parks took an active role last year. I've just been here, I think, a month when the first meeting was. I was supposed to give a CBEDS formal report to you. But they looked at the projections. And from the projections, we're actually down about 58 students from what we actually projected. So taking the information that we had, and some of our discussions the past couple of months have been, well, how can we really validate the information? Are there demographers out there that we could really use to really get a handle on the movement within the area? Assistant Sue Parks and I spent some time, we were actually under contract with Decision Insight. And we had a very, I felt, productive phone call. They have a tremendous amount of information available that will really continue to give us some of the tools and information we need to hopefully more accurately project. Again, I use project versus predict or estimate. Project the movement for the out years. Also being a part, personally, on behalf of the request of Superintendent Monroe and the County Chamber of Commerce Community Advisory Council, I'm also getting a very solid feel of the informational flow of the cost of living in our local area, the housing challenges that our residents face on a daily basis. What are some of the potential movements out there in our communities? I think as we begin to utilize our current contract with some of the other information that we begin to know firsthand, you know, I feel we'll be able to generate some much more quantitative information that we present later on in the year. We had a very frank discussion, in fact, with Decision Insight, and prior to even conducting that phone call, I went out to a couple of peers that I worked with in the past, asking them for their input of who are some quality demographers out there. And on both or three of the lists that came back, Decision Insight was one of those recognized throughout our industry here in the state of having qualitative and quantitative information to base our information on. So it's really now our responsibility, mainly mine, to really utilize the information that we do have, how it's affected by our local economy and some of our growth or not so much growth patterns to come back with better information. The next couple of slides are going to show specifically the movement of enrollment. In this case, we took it back to 07-08 to 15-16. We have information that goes back further that you have on previous records, but we're trying to keep it at about, you know, a 10-year cycle for you to see where it's at. And really, you'll see the growth up and down from the last couple of years. If you look at from 11-12, 22-46, 12-13, 22-81, and we're down to about 22-11. Again, that's what we project our funding on for the district overall. If you look at CBEDS enrollments for our middle schools, again, here you see this is some of our, you know, I guess you could say positive news in this whole pattern, because there's been consistent growth or flatline equity among our middle schools. And again, attribute some of the programs that we offer there. In fact, some of the most recent calls that I received in tandem with this, which is factual-based because I'm receiving the calls personally, is the fact that what our middle schools offer in comparison to our K-8 districts around us is where I'm receiving the most of my questions regarding the measures that we're projecting and the fact that we do have much more to offer for the students at this age group, which may lead to some of this particular growth within this sector. And of course, we've got our high schools where we seem to have our biggest challenge in order to maintain the level of enrollment at that piece of it. I think a key component or statement that was made tonight is how we need to continue to project to the district what we do well in spite of our challenges, really go out to really market the ability of what we have to offer for the students in the area in spite of our challenges for economies, living conditions, etc. And of course, our small schools, which again are going to be basically receiving the influx or so of students as it's affected throughout the year at our other sites. And then this breaks it down traditionally by the grade, K through 5 elementary, middle school, and high school. Kind of break down and graph even more so down to get the numerical data, of which you might know quite well. And that's where we end up with that piece of it. So this is our preliminary report again. We now go through and continue to shake the trees to validate the information that we received on this formal count before our submission to the state. So with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Okay, Jeremy.
So we've used Decision Insight demographers. Mm-hmm. And what are we, what is our thinking right now about a, let's call it a 5-year demographic study, a projection? How realistic would it be to ask for such a thing? It certainly would be needed, I think.
In personally viewing the website specifically with the representative, I think the information and the tools, and Molly, please add, I think it's definitely there to get better data, for us to utilize better data. I think we'll be able now to project that at a much clearer state, utilize the information they have. I mean, they were showing us specifically how to plot attendance areas. It was really interesting to see the length of distance our secondary students were coming from, as they were able to plot. This was information from last year, because we still have to download this year's information. The distance that our secondary students would travel to get to our schools as compared to our elementary because of what we had to offer. So I believe that information is available. We have to go out there now and specifically gather that piece of it.
One follow-up question, if you don't mind, and I'm not putting you on the spot. Do you think it would be realistic to come back to the board by the end of this school year with some sort of 3 to 5 year demographic projection?
Well, I think the best word is, I don't believe it's not realistic, but I think it's almost inherent. We do, to get better at it. And of course, it'll be just like our other factors, there'll be a projection that we'll continue to update based upon the information as it changes. But I think, I personally feel, Molly, please add, that we'll have better information to bring forward. That's much more quantitative.
I would add, too, that they mentioned, you know, they look at each year, they look at housing development, they look at lots of different factors. So a 3 to 5 year out would be a pretty rough projection, I think, because we don't know, you know, what may be happening, but it would give us a ballpark, I think. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Deb?
I know I should know this, but this is lots of total students. It's not just movement of students. Because when I look at the projections for the high school that the district did prior to you coming, it's Santa Cruz High is actually up 8 and Harbor High is down 42. And I'm wondering, does that capture any of the movement of students moving between the projection of students who were projected to go to Harbor but ended up at Santa Cruz? But it's total loss of bodies.
Yeah. This is total loss throughout the district. I think there is definitely going to be, as you mentioned, based upon programs at some sites compared to other sites or what the preference is, that'll be notated in this overall movement, and then trying to get its finance to that would be more so based upon discussion at the local level. Yes.
And then I have a second question for, remind me when the two elementary schools were closed, what years was that?
2004.
So we're still up, I mean, even though you go back to 2007, overall enrollment's still much higher than it was, it's still higher than.
We can pull it. I can. We have that. It's just like just cut it off.
Yeah.
No,
I just thought it was interesting. It's still, even though it's lower than last year, it's overall
high.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
Harbor High did some checking on those kids that didn't return this year, and the vast majority of them that didn't return moved out of the area. Mm-hmm. They were moved out of district, relocated.
Yeah. If I could just add to that, I think that's one of the. Sitting on the Community Advisory Council or Committee with the Santa Cruz Chamber of Commerce, that is probably the most fervent discussed topic when we meet, is that of housing. How do we really continue or begin to attract professionals, residents, families, you know, for the industries we want that we have here? How do we maintain them with affordability and accessibility? That's just really a high topic. And based upon some of the recent conversations that Superintendent Monroe and I have had, we've set up a visit with Santa Clara Unified based upon their employee housing project they initiated. Mr. Miller and I have had conversations with local city experts that work with redevelopment and some of the housing projects there. So we're also getting our pulse and firsthand to add to our projection pieces here of how soon projects will begin, what's stated, what's out there. We've had recent discussions with some nonprofits that set up some of the financing pieces for groups. So we're gonna gather more information. I know we're gonna gather more information that'll go hand in hand with this other data to get better at what we need to do to project enrollment.
Sheila?
Well, this isn't what I was gonna ask, but the whole question of housing, I was in the cabinet report, there was an article about what San Francisco is doing to get housing for their teachers. And it is a little overwhelming because the districts that have lots of money are able to do things that we can't even think about doing, but yet we are a creative community. So I'm happy to hear those conversations are going on. I know those of us who have young adults are already hearing, I mean, this is the conversation, because you're looking at your kids and going, can they afford to live here? Can they get a job here? Can they, you know, I mean, that's an ongoing thing. My only question was to ask about demographic information. I just wanted to get a little clearer about what you get. Like, with demographic information, do you also find out about how many children are coming to be of kindergarten age? Do you find that kind of information out, or is it much more the massive movements?
I haven't explored all of that with this particular demographer, but I know a lot of information would be readily handleable or accessible by us in dealing with our local county government. Yeah. So that's where we have to take some of that ownership
determine. The county has a lot of this information.
So we go back and say, what were the birth rates 5 years ago? What was the number of students?
Right.
So we would use that in conjunction with this. And also, I think it goes back to recently, I think about 2 or 3 months ago, we brought to you the report for establishing our level one developer fees. I think it also behooves us to make sure we have the right vendor that also shakes those tree leaves to validate that information to determine what type of growth patterns there are that connect directly with housing. And that would be the next piece for us, because there's already talk about how the state's looking to increase those developer fees in January. If we want to do or go into match, we have to do another one of those reports, which we just did. And I think it's finding a quality vendor that you put all these together, arms up with more information, then I think with more information that will allow us to be better at this projection piece.
Yeah, if ever we doubted that we should be moving out into the community and into the county, into our representatives, this is the time when we really have to.
Absolutely.
Decision Insight does look at birth rates as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Patty?
I want to be clear as I look at the data. How long has the PK been in service through the district? Because we have the 07, 08. So we've picked up a larger group through a younger demographics, but only by 200 when I was thinking about what Deb said from 07 to 08. So we've had growth, but a very minimal amount in our elementary population.
TK actually isn't new kids, it's just a new grade level. They were in kindergarten before.
That's right.
So those students that were born between September 2nd and December 2nd used to be in our kindergarten classes, and now they're in our TK classes. So it's just kind of a redistribution, and those students end up with an extra year of elementary school.
That was the piece. And so for me, it's listed as PK, so that's why I asked, as opposed to the letter T, it had the letter P for pre. Just wanted to sort of get my mind around that number. Thank you.
Sheila, did you have another question?
No. Okay. Oh, no.
Right, this is the report.
This is for information only. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 8.3.4, New Business Resolution 23-15-16, designating week of the classified employee and week of the teacher.
As we just celebrated the week of the administrators, we wanted to bring forth today the resolution to acknowledge April 25th through the 29th as the week of the classified employee and May 2nd through the 6th as the week of the teacher.
Any comments, Patty? Patty,
oh, I'm
like
sorry, that was okay. Left on from, thank you, Claudia, excuse me.
Are there any comments? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Comments from the public? Okay. It's a resolution, so roll call.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Next item, 8.3.5, board policies that we saw last week, last meeting.
So you'll see in your packets board policies that we brought forward last time with some slight changes made to the staff development policy and the organization policy per our conversations.
Mm-hmm. Any? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
I'll second.
Jeremy moves and Deb seconds. Discussion of the public or questions?
I just wanted to comment.
Sure.
I just wanted to thank Nancy for creating the Word documents so that we can mm-hmm. do the comparison. I appreciate that.
It made a difference. Thank you. Yeah, all in favor?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Okay. And that.
Adjourned?
Meeting adjourned. Yay. Our next meeting is November 18th.
November 8th. November 18th? So that means November.
Oh, right. We have a study session.
We have a study session. Our next regular meeting.
So when
November 4th.
That, what?
November 4th.
Is our next meeting agenda meeting?
No.
No.
Our agenda meeting is
the week before that. I think it's the 10th.
The 10th?
The 10th, yeah.
What were you answering November 4th to, Chris?
That's our study session.
Oh, that's a study set.
Yeah.
The next agenda committee will be
the 10th?
Okay.
I just want to make sure I have it down. Well, I need to start a meeting. No? Then I'll take it.
Yeah, this I'm going to have 4:30 in the
because
I'll be
late tonight
and tomorrow.
Is that
fine?
Yeah.
Okay,
that
works.
Yeah.
Student
buttery?
Okay,
so 4:15
you said?
No, 4:30. 4:30 p.m.
Buttery.
Monday.
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
And
this is
level.
What happens when you don't have a paper board book anymore.
You are a broken record.
I am a broken record.
Think of the trees that you've saved.
Oh, please. They're always planting trees.
There's
a lot of dying trees out there.
There are. I'm
neurotic about my trees. I really.
No, I keep a bucket.
They're looking.
I keep a bucket in my shower, and I go out and water our lemon tree because I think it's going to die.
I am not going to have my apricot
tree
die.
It's really bad. The trees are looking.
No, they're supposed to get. They're supposed to get 10.
And they're more vulnerable.
Fruit trees are supposed to get 10 gallons.
My fruit tree doesn't get anything.
So everything is fine. I called the fruit guy. And he's like, yeah, you have to water them more. He said everybody that the tree is fine. They really shouldn't. They should let everything else die. You know?
Nancy, do you put the snacks back into it?
No, I am going to just dump those snacks because, you know, we've all touched them now with our hands and whatever. So take yours with you if you need to.
What?